Now on the BBC World Service, a unique tribute to Dr. Martin Luther King, as the Dalai Lama and other global figures read the words of I Have a Dream. The programme is introduced by Dr. Claiborne Carson, the editor of the King Papers and the director of the Martin Luther King Jr. Research and Education Institute at Stanford University.
The dew is still on the sloping lawn surrounding the Lincoln Memorial here in Washington, D.C. The sun is out, and the weather gives promise for a comfortable day, possibly hot.
50 years ago today, I stood in a crowd hundreds of thousands strong at the Lincoln Memorial in Washington, D.C., and listened to a day-long program of songs, speeches, and resolutions that would go down in history.
Buses have continued to pour in here and have now encircled the drive, which is already closed to regular traffic. Groups have been arriving from all over the United States. In the past few moments, for example, I've seen buses from Cleveland and Youngstown, Ohio.
I had arrived on an overnight bus. Others came by train, some even on foot, to take part in the March on Washington for Jobs and Freedom. I was groggy that morning. It was my first time in the nation's capital. I had less than $50 in my pocket. As I got off the bus, an elderly black man, who must have quietly observed me during the ride, pushed a $20 bill into my hand, guessing correctly that I was worried about having enough money to return home.
George, the crowd does seem to be picking up now. It's getting thicker, and you can hear them singing now in the background.
We shall overcome. We shall overcome.
Well, I was prepared a few minutes ago to say rather than a march, it's a leisurely stroll. You might call it a masked straggle, but it's become more than that now. It's just a mass jam. People are so close together that it might almost be possible to walk along from here. We're on a raised platform right on their heads over to the other side of the pool.
Incidentally, those who haven't eaten lunch down here already might as well forget it, because there's not enough room now to take the cellophane off a peanut butter sandwich.
I remember being amazed by the number of marchers, more people than I had seen in my entire life growing up in a small town in New Mexico. Because I don't sing well, I join only sporadically in the endless choruses of We Shall Overcome. Approaching the Lincoln Memorial, I edge through the crowd toward the speaker's platform, and for the next few hours watched as people I had only seen on television, Mahalia Jackson, Joan Baez, and the group Peter, Paul, and Mary, entertained and roused the crowd.
Over here on the stage area, I'm right up on the stage right now, the celebrities are beginning to arrive, and at present, Peter, Paul, and Mary are just approaching the microphones. They're about to sing to the crowd. Let's go now and join that.
The answer is blowing in the wind.
By the early afternoon, the heat of Washington in August led me to join the people who removed their shoes to cool their feet in the reflecting pool of the Lincoln Memorial.
We still have hundreds of people with their feet dangling in the pool, cooling off.
Well, the pool's so shallow, I thought maybe some might actually just walk in.
Well, it will only take a couple of thousand more, and they'll be pushed in, whether they want to or not.
I thrilled to the speech delivered by John Lewis, then 23, and the newly elected chair of the Student Nonviolent Coordinating Committee. He was the speaker who was closest to my own age, and he expressed a sense of urgency that I would soon share. We want our freedom, he said, and we want it now.
We're tired of seeing our people locked up in jail over and over again, and then you holler, be patient. How long can we be patient? We want our freedom, and we want it now.
By the early afternoon, when Dr. King, the concluding speaker, was introduced, I was preoccupied with thoughts of finding the bus that had brought me. But I didn't want to miss his speech. I edged my way toward the rear of the crowd so I could make a quick getaway when he had finished speaking.
Reverend Dr. Martin Luther King, Jr., president of the Southern Christian Leadership Conference, is now on top of one of the television platforms above the crowd, directly in front of me. He doesn't seem to be saying anything. He's waving. The crowd is waving back to him. They've taken the placards down so that now we can see way back to the street without any obstruction.
With the benefit of time, we can see that the speech was one of the most important pieces of political oratory of our modern age, a speech that ranks with Abraham Lincoln's Gettysburg Address in the history of American public discourse. King's speech changed the course of my life. I didn't realize it then, but it launched my career as a historian of the modern African-American freedom struggle. 2 decades after listening to Dr. King speak, Mrs. Coretta Scott King would ask me to edit her late husband's papers. And it is not an exaggeration to say that discovering the deeper meanings of King's I Have a Dream speech has taken me many decades. In his speech, King talked of the day when the bells of freedom would ring from every village and every hamlet, from every state and every city. And his words have indeed been heard throughout the world. They have resonated with the desires of all those who have struggled for justice and freedom. My travels have made me increasingly aware of the universal significance of King's dream. When I took my play, Passages of Martin Luther King, to China, I heard an actor express King's dream in Chinese. And a few years ago, I heard a Palestinian actor convey King's dream in Arabic.
أقول لكم اليوم يا أصدقائي رغم أننا نعاني من معضلات اليوم والغد إلا أن الحلم لا زال يراودني إنني أحلم إنه حلم ينغرس عميقا في صميمنا إنني أحلم.
When Martin Luther King delivered his magnificent speech, he could not have predicted that his words would resound around the world. He certainly could not have predicted when he stood in front of the Lincoln Memorial that his own memorial would someday stand near Lincoln's, and that the King National Memorial would stand facing Thomas Jefferson, the author of the Declaration of Independence. When I helped design the King Memorial, I envisioned King's image engaged in a symbolic, perpetual dialogue with Jefferson about the future of the American democratic experiment. King was asking the same question that Lincoln had asked 100 years earlier. That is, whether any nation conceived in liberty and dedicated to the proposition that all men are created equal, could long endure. King, like Lincoln, understood that the American democratic experiment of government of, by, and for the people might perish from the earth, or might instead have a new birth of freedom.
Freedom is a thing worth shouting about. Freedom worth shouting about. Get it all over the world.
You are about to hear a unique version of King's I Have a Dream oration. The words are Dr. Martin Luther King Jr.'s. The voices come from men and women who have dedicated their lives to equality and justice. You will hear from humanitarian leaders, from Nobel laureates, from those who have espoused the cause of freedom. It is a tribute to a man whose work changed the course of my life, of many lives, and who, a half century on, we remember as a man who dared to believe that the world could be changed, a man who dared to have a dream.
I have the pleasure to present to you Dr. Martin Luther King, Jr. I am happy to join with you today in what will go down in history as the greatest demonstration for freedom in the history of our nation. Five score years ago, a great American in whose symbolic shadow we stand today signed the Emancipation Proclamation.
This momentous decree came as a great beacon light of hope to millions of Negro slaves who have been seared in the flames of withering injustice. It came as a joyous daybreak to end the long night of their captivity. But 100 years later, the Negro still is not free. 100 years later, the life of the Negro is still sadly crippled by the manacles of segregation and the chains of discrimination. 100 years later, the Negro lives on a lonely island of poverty in the midst of a vast ocean of material prosperity. 100 years later, the Negro is still languishing in the corners of American society and find himself in exile in his own land. So we have come here today.
So we have come here today to dramatize a shameful condition. In a sense, we have come to our nation's capital to cash a check. When the architects of our republic wrote the magnificent words of the Constitution and the Declaration of Independence, they were signing a promissory note to which every American was to fall heir. This note was a promise that all men, yes, black men as well as white men, would be guaranteed the unalienable rights of life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness.
It's obvious today that America has defaulted on this promissory note insofar as her citizens of color are concerned. Instead of honoring this sacred obligation, America has given the Negro people a bad check, a check which has come back marked insufficient funds. But we refuse
But we refuse to believe that the Bank of Justice is bankrupt. We refuse to believe that there are insufficient funds in the great vaults of opportunity of this nation. So we have come to cash this check. A check that will give us upon demand the richness of freedom and the security of justice.
We have also come to this hallowed spot.
To remind America of the fierce urgency of now. This is no time to engage in the luxury of cooling off or to take the tranquilizing drug of gradualism. Now is the time to take real the promises of democracy.
Now is the time to rise from the dark and desolate valley of segregation to the sunlit path of racial justice. Now is the time to lift our nation from the quicksands of racial injustice to the solid rock of brotherhood. Now is the time to make justice a reality for all of God's children. It would be fatal for the nation to overlook the urgency of the moment. This sweltering summer of the Negro's legitimate discontent will not pass until there is an invigorating autumn of freedom and equality. 1963 is not an end, but a beginning.
Those who hope that the Negro needed to blow off steam and will now be content will have a rude awakening if the nation returns to business as usual.
Those who hope that the Negro needed to blow off steam and will now be content will have a rude awakening if the nation returns to business as usual. There will be neither rest nor tranquility in America until the Negro is granted his citizenship rights. The whirlwinds of revolt will continue to shake the foundations of our nation until the bright day of justice emerges.
But there is something that I must say to my people who stand on the warm threshold which leads into the palace of justice. In the process of gaining our rightful place, we must not be guilty of wrongful deeds. Let us not seek to satisfy our thirst for freedom by drinking from the cup of bitterness and hatred. We must forever conduct our struggle on the high plane of dignity and discipline. We must not allow our creative protest to degenerate into physical violence. Again and again, we must rise to majestic heights of meeting physical force with soul force.
The marvelous new militancy which has engulfed the Negro community must not lead us to a distrust of all white people, for many of our white brothers, as evidenced by their presence here today, have come to realize that their destiny is tied up with our destiny. They have come to realize that their freedom is inextricably bound to our freedom. We cannot walk alone.
As we walk, we must make the pledge that we shall always march ahead. We cannot turn back. There are those who are asking the devotees of civil rights, when will you be satisfied? We can never be satisfied as long as the Negro is the victim of the unspeakable horrors of police brutality.
We can never be satisfied as long as our bodies, heavy with the fatigue of travel, cannot gain lodging in the motels of the highways and the hotels of the cities. We cannot be satisfied as long as the Negro's basic mobility is from a smaller ghetto to a larger one. We can never be satisfied as long as our children are stripped of their selfhood and robbed of their dignity by signs stating, for whites only.
We cannot be satisfied as long as a Negro in Mississippi cannot vote, and a Negro in New York believe he has nothing for which to vote. No, no, we are not satisfied. And we will not be satisfied until justice rolls down like waters and righteousness like a mighty stream. I'm not unmindful that some of you have come here out of great trials and tribulations. Some of you have come fresh from narrow jail cells. Some of you have come from areas...
Some of you have come fresh from narrow jail cells. Some of you have come from areas where your quest for freedom left you battered by the storms of persecution and staggered by the winds of police brutality. You have been the veterans of creative suffering. Continue to work with the faith that unearned suffering is redemptive.
Go back to Mississippi. Go back to Alabama. Go back to South Carolina. Go back to Georgia. Go back to Louisiana. Go back to the slums and ghettos of our northern cities, knowing that somehow this situation can and will be changed. Let us not wallow in the valley of despair. I say to you today, my friend, so even though we face the difficulties of today and tomorrow, I still have a dream. It is a dream deeply rooted in the American dream. I have a dream that one day this nation will rise up and live out the true meaning of its creed. We hold these truths to be self-evident that all men are created equal.
I have a dream that one day on the red hills of Georgia, the sons of former slaves and the sons of former slave owners will be able to sit down together at the table of brotherhood. I have a dream
that one day even the state of Mississippi, a state sweltering with the heat of injustice, sweltering with the heat of oppression, will be transformed into an oasis of freedom and justice. I have a dream
that my four little children will one day live in a nation where they will not be judged by the color of their skin, but by the content of their character.
I have a dream today.
I have a dream that one day down in Alabama, with its vicious racists, with its governor having his lips dripping with the words of interposition and nullification, one day, right there in Alabama, little black boys and black girls will be able to join hands with little white boys and white girls as sisters and brothers.
But I have a dream today.
I have a dream that one day every valley shall be exalted, every hill and mountain shall be made low, the rough places will be made plain, and the crooked places will be made straight, and the glory of the Lord shall be revealed, and all flesh shall see it together.
This is our hope. This is the faith that I go wide to the south with. With this faith, we will be able to hew out of the mountain of despair a stone of hope. With this faith,
we will be able to transform the jangling discord of our nation into a beautiful symphony of brotherhood. With this faith, we will be able to work together, to pray together, to struggle together, to go to jail together, to stand up for freedom together, knowing that we will be free one day.
This will be the day when all of God's children will be able to sing with new meaning, "My country, 'tis of thee. Sweet land of liberty, of thee I sing. Land where my fathers died, land of the pilgrim's pride, from every mountainside. Let freedom ring, and if America is to be a great nation, this must become true. So let freedom ring from the prodigious hilltops of New Hampshire. Let freedom ring from the mighty mountains of New York. Let freedom ring from the heightening Alleghenies of Pennsylvania. Let freedom ring from the snow-capped Rockies of Colorado. Let freedom ring from the curvaceous slopes of California. But not only that, let freedom ring from Stone Mountain of Georgia. Let freedom ring from Lookout Mountain of Tennessee. Let freedom ring from every hill and molehill of Mississippi. From every mountainside, let freedom ring.
Let freedom ring, and when this happens, when we allow freedom ring, when we let it ring from every village and every hamlet, from every state and every city, we will be able to speed up that day when all of God's children, black men and white men, Jews and Gentiles, Protestants and Catholics, will be able to join hands and sing in the words of the old Negro spiritual, "Free at last, free at last. Thank God Almighty, we are free at last."
In I Have a Dream, you heard Congressman John Lewis, the last surviving member of the Big Six leaders of the American Civil Rights Movement, who spoke as a 23-year-old at the March on Washington on the 28th of August, 1963. Dr. Maya Angelou, American author and poet, Northern Coordinator for Dr. King's Southern Christian Leadership Conference. Professor Muhammad Yunus, Nobel Peace Laureate and Bangladeshi microcredit economist. Doreen Lawrence, the mother of the murdered British teenager Stephen Lawrence. Weijing Sheng, Chinese human rights and democracy campaigner, imprisoned for over 18 years. Mary Robinson, former UN High Commissioner for Human Rights and the first female president of Ireland. John Hume, awarded the Martin Luther King Award and jointly awarded the Nobel Peace Prize for his contribution to the peace process in Northern Ireland. His Holiness the Dalai Lama. Albie Sachs, anti-apartheid campaigner, appointed by Nelson Mandela to serve as a judge on the Constitutional Court of South Africa. President Ellen Johnson Sirleaf of Liberia, the first female head of state in Africa, Nobel Peace Laureate and campaigner for women's rights. Raja Shahada, Palestinian lawyer, writer and human rights activist. Bundeleka Mandela, first granddaughter of Nelson Mandela, speaking for the former president of South Africa. Ariel Dorfman, Chilean-American novelist, playwright, journalist, and human rights activist. David Grossman, Israeli author and peace campaigner. Dr. Shireen Ebadi, human rights lawyer, Iran's first female judge and Nobel Peace Laureate. Malala Yousafzai, 16-year-old student and education activist from Swat in Pakistan, shot by the Taliban for going to school. Satish Kumar, Indian peace campaigner and environmentalist. Maestro Jose Antonio Abreu, Venezuelan economist, educator and musician. Founder of the El Sistema project, which harnesses classical music to the cause of social justice. Joan Baez, American singer-songwriter, musician and activist, who performed at the 1963 March on Washington. Stevie Wonder, American musician, singer and songwriter, campaigner for Martin Luther King's birthday to become a national holiday in the United States. The introduction was written and presented by Professor Claiborne Carson, editor of Dr. King's papers and the founding director of the Martin Luther King Jr. Research and Education Institute at Stanford University.
I have a dream today.